You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle. This is the Daily Local News for Wednesday, November 15, 2017.
We also invited Representative Hollingsworth, but did not return our communications with him, so we will be leaving a chair empty for him.
Tonight, for the first time, the four Democratic candidates for Indiana's 9th Congressional District will meet publicly in a forum held by the nonprofit political group Hoosier Action. WFHB News Director Wes Martin speaks with Hoosier Action Outreach Director Jesse Meyerson in a preview of tonight's debate at Ivy Tech's Lampkin Hall.
Also coming up in the next half hour, 'tis the season. Today on Better Beware. We'll air the first half of our holiday scam series, warning consumers about holiday phishing, evites, and more. That's coming up on a new edition of our consumer watchdog segment, Better Beware. But first, your daily headlines.
The Owen County Prosecutor's Office is leveling charges against the president of the Owen County Commission, Don Minnick. Minnick is the latest Owen County civil servant to be arrested on allegations of misuse of public resources. Last month, Owen County Highway Superintendent Joe Pettyjohn was arrested on felony counts of theft for the sale of a county backhoe. Pettyjohn is accused of pocketing thousands of dollars in proceeds from that sale. The Herald Times reports that Pettyjohn was fired during an Owen County Commissioners meeting last month. WFHB obtained Minnick's probable cause affidavit from the Owen County prosecutor. Minnick is accused of selling a semi-truck to Owen County through one of the workers on his farm, as well as scrapping an Owen County truck and pocketing the proceeds. Minnick is charged with a Class D felony count of conflict of interest and a Class D felony count of official misconduct. He was arrested on Monday.
The Bloomington Animal Shelter will be closed until 3 p.m. tomorrow and Friday due to construction. The work is expected to affect traffic on South Walnut, with all but one lane closed. The animal shelter will still be taking emergency calls. The number for emergency calls is 812-349-3492. Shelter staff say they will also dispatch animal control if necessary and assist in scheduling appointments.
Monroe County Community School Corporation is taking the first steps toward reviewing its school board district lines. In its meeting last night, the school board approved motions to establish a review committee as well as amend its articles of incorporation as needed. The boundaries of the current school board districts have not been updated since 1994. School board member Janine Butler says she agrees the school board districts are, in her words, out of whack.
I don't think there's any doubt about the fact that we need to look at evening out districts. And I think, if I heard what people say, I think that's what their desire is. And if so, I certainly am in support of that.
The school board has been pressed by community members for months to review how district boundaries could be redrawn to create more diverse representation. The board has formally discussed the issue three times without creating a review committee. In its September 26 meeting, its October 19th work session, and in a November 2nd community conversation. In previous sessions, some board members indicated they needed more time to process the request. Community members kept up the pressure last night. Deborah Meyerson spoke on behalf of the Community Committee for Educational Equity. The CCEE began the push for a review committee with a 270-signature petition earlier this fall. The CCEE has been joined in its request by a number of community organizations, including the League of Women Voters, Standing Up for Racial Justice, and the NAACP. Meyerson read CCEE's recommendations.
First, appoint a review committee to update the school board districts so they equitably reflect the current population of Monroe County. On this committee, to compose of designated MCCSE school board members or administrative appointees, as well as a diverse selection of community members. And finally, the action that this committee would take would be to consult with a demographer and determine and propose appropriate adjustments to achieve equity in school board districts.
William Hosea, president of the Monroe County Black Democratic Caucus, cited MCCSC's own protocols in his request for equity and representation.
Based on the MCCSC Board of Trustees Protocol, Section 2 Governance, the board sits in trust for the entire community. Well, that community has been asking for your help to ensure equity and fairness in the matter of school board redistricting. Section 2 further states that the board will seek always to govern with a focus on the future, on results, and on continuous improvement. Also, to encourage collective decision-making and diversity in viewpoints.
Hosea went on to ask those who were opposed to a review committee to explain their reasoning. His request received no response.
So we want to work with the school board, but at the end of the day, if we don't have a school board that wants to work with us and wants to work against us, then we have no choice but to exercise our right to look at other candidates during next year's elections who are going to be more responsive to our needs.
Superintendent Judy DeMuth will be responsible for appointing the review committee. School board member Sue Wunzer asked DeMuth about the committee's composition and when DeMuth might actually appoint it.
And I think what I heard recommended was people who are representing the different constituencies, having somebody from the League of Women Voters and from the National Organization for Women and for Standing Up for Racial Justice and the NAACP. So will those folks, I assume, will be also included as part of this, since those are the people who have, oh, and the Educational Equity Committee, since those are the people who have been addressing us.
We'll probably have representative folks,
right?
Because we do have parents from our various districts in the community, and so we want to make sure the county is equally represented. So we, you know, if you have a too large of a committee, you can't
get the work done. But I'm just thinking the people who came to us have a vested interest.
Sure.
And so I think those folks, and many of them are parents, and some of them, you know, live, and they all live throughout the school corporation. So I was just ensuring. And do you know when you might be appointing that committee?
I think the next step is to listen to the demographer at our work session. And
okay.
Once we listen to that person, then we'll have more dialogue about that.
The school board will hold a work session with a state demographer on December 12th.
The Monroe County Community School Corporation Board approved teacher raises during last night's meeting. Personnel Director Andrea Mobley says the collective bargaining agreement with the Monroe County Education Association provides an overall 2.7 increase in salaries over the next two academic years.
A teacher's qualifying data and information from the 16-17 school year will be used to determine any additional points to assess whether the teacher qualifies for an increase in salary. The salary range for the 2017-18 year is from $38.5 to $74.5.
Mobley says the school corporation plans to transition to what she called a two-column schedule in the 2018-19 school year, with salaries ranging from $39,000 to $74,705. Mobley says all teachers will see a minimum raise of $1,200 that year.
By state statute in both years, with the exception of the first and second year teachers, only teachers rated as effective or highly effective are eligible for raises.
As an incentive, teachers with perfect attendance will also receive a $500 bonus.
Support for WFHB comes from Cardinal Spirits Distillery, located on the B Line. Cardinal Spirits has opened a new kitchen featuring local seasonal food made from scratch to complement their craft cocktails. Dinner available Tuesday through Saturday at Cardinal Spirits, 922 South Morton Street. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Scott Weddle.
And I'm Barbara Fuqua. Democratic hopefuls Dan Cannon, Liz Watson, Brandon Hood, and Rob Chatlos will debate public concerns raised by members of the nonprofit political group Hoosier Action this evening. The Democratic candidates are vying to oust Republican incumbent Trey Hollingsworth in next year's 9th congressional district elections. WFHB News Director Wes Martin spoke with the Hoosier Action's Outreach Director, Jesse Meyerson, about tonight's candidate forum.
Okay, Jesse, can you tell me a little bit about tonight's event? It's my understanding you're going to have four Democratic candidates for the 9th Congressional District. Can you tell me a little bit about what Hoosier Action does and why it is that you're behind setting up this forum?
Yeah, so Hoosier Action is a community organization that seeks to build the power of Southern Indiana's working families along a statement of values entitled Building the Indiana We Deserve, which people can read on our website, HoosierAction.org, that basically outlines the various ways in which all Hoosiers deserve freedom, dignity, and democracy, and all too often are currently denied it. So we're hosting this candidate forum. You're correct in saying that four Democratic candidates will be there. We also invited Representative Hollingsworth, but he did not return our communications with him. So we will be leaving a chair empty for him. And we're hosting this in order to assert our agenda and bring the voices of everyday Hoosiers from this part of the state into the public square and attract gravity around that agenda so that the candidates will feel that they have to respond to us and be accountable to us because our political system too often gives too much voice to the wealthy few and not enough voice to everyday people.
And what are some of the subjects that you are going to be asking the four candidates for the Democratic nomination for the 9th Congressional District?
We have members asking a variety of questions that concern them and around which they have personal stories, everything from sexual harassment on the job at low-wage work to healthcare insecurity to the issues that IU students are facing. We've got a question coming from one of the members of our IU chapter, which is entitled Campus Action for Democracy. So we'll be asking an array of questions, and then people who come to attend the meeting who are not Hoosier Action members will also have an opportunity to ask their questions of the candidates.
And is this the first time that Hoosier Action has held one of these forums with political candidates?
This is our first candidate forum. We will be hosting more of them as the march toward 2018 elections continues, and not just with the candidates for U.S. House, but also for a variety of state House and Senate races in the area. We've done a lot of work around healthcare, not just resisting the threats to healthcare and Medicaid that were coming from Washington, but also from our own state House. The governor had a plan to put a work requirement on Medicaid, which our members were very concerned about. We've partnered with other organizations like Mother Hubbard's Cupboard around food security and food stamp recipients. We're going to be organizing a project around them and small farmers in order to have an impact on the farm bill. Our Senator Joe Donnelly is on the Agriculture Committee in the Senate, so we hope we can have a big impact there. But essentially, it's just the areas that concern most people most of the time, which is to say housing and healthcare and food and education and work and having all of the freedom and dignity that you need in order to create a vibrant community and healthy families.
And have you heard anything back from the candidates? Are you expecting all of them to attend outside of Representative Hollingsworth?
The candidates who have confirmed their participation are Dan Cannon, Robert Chatlos, Brandon Hood, and Liz Watson in alphabetical order. And I anticipate they've all been promoting the event. This is the first time they'll get a chance to square off with one another since the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee registered Indiana's 9th Congressional District as one of its target districts. So it's the most competitive race in the state. And this will be the first time that the candidates have gotten a chance to square off before that was since that announcement was made. And we expect there will be a lot of eyes on it, and that they will get their positions across and differentiate themselves from one another. And we'll see how they respond to the concerns of Hoosier Action members and members of the community.
And how large is Hoosier Action, and how many people do you think are involved, both in South Central Indiana and across the state?
Well, our biggest chapter is in Bloomington, but we're working to build chapters in Morgan and Johnson County and at IU and down in New Albany. We've got a campaign down there in defense of some public housing that the mayor is threatening to demolish. That campaign is called We Are New Albany. And I'd urge people to look that up. It's also on our website, HoosierAction.org. So we're growing. I can't give you a precise figure for the number of dues-paying members that we have, but I bet that tonight we'll fill up the Lampkin Hall at Ivy Tech Community College Bloomington on the west side, which has a capacity of 125 people, just based on the attendance who've RSVP'd on Facebook.
And it's my understanding that the event tonight will be live streamed. Is that so? And where could people check that out online?
Yes, people should follow Hoosier Action on Facebook, and we will be live streaming it.
Is this partnered with Ivy Tech at all?
No, it will just be taking place there. I can tell you that delegations of Hoosier Action members have gone to Washington, D.C., to do both lobby visits with our elected representatives in Congress and also direct actions, including some nonviolent civil disobedience, getting arrested at Senator Todd Young's office in protest of the plan to tear health care from millions of Americans. So what we're doing is bringing people together. We're trying to bring people from a place of isolation to a place of community, from a place of despair into a place of action, and from a place of scarcity into a place of abundance, where we realize actually there is more than enough for us all to live in freedom, dignity, and democracy. It's just that it's being hoarded by a tiny, wealthy few, and that we've got to get into some conflict with those people around the things that matter to us. In order to transform Indiana to the state that we believe that it can be and that we believe that we deserve.
Is Hoosier Action a nonprofit or registered as a nonprofit entity?
It is a nonprofit entity, yeah. It's a 501c4, which means that we can do direct political work, but we are not-for-profit, yes.
All right, Jesse Meyerson, thank you very much for speaking with us.
My pleasure. Have a good one.
It was WFHB News Director Wes Martin speaking with Hoosier Action Outreach Director Jesse Meyerson about tonight's Democratic Candidate Forum. The Hoosier Action Candidate Forum takes place at Lampkin Hall at Ivy Tech Bloomington from 6 to 8 p.m.
The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Up next, our weekly consumer watchdog segment, Better Beware.
Welcome to Better Beware. Here's your consumer watchdog from WFHB Community Radio with the latest information and helpful hints designed to keep your head out of the clouds, your feet on the ground, and your money in your pocket.
Well, the holiday season is looming on the horizon, and before you get all caught up in planning and cooking and traveling and shopping, let's make sure it isn't looming like the iceberg was to the folks on the Titanic. The Better Business Bureau is warning about the 9 most common scams floating around this time of year, and this is a time for tradition, so we'll take it traditionally from bottom to top. Number 9 is that sweet, kindly email from Santa Claus that comes down your virtual chimney with a sack full of viruses to hang right in your face. Sometimes it can be one of the dreaded ransomware programs. Unless you know and have confirmed by calling, texting, or emailing them directly that Santa's letter was sent by a friend or relative, delete it, or it will slay your computer. At number 8, beware of any holiday cards that don't come in the U.S. mail. Fake e-cards are an old scam going back to the 1990s, but they snare people every year with nasty malware. You get an email saying you've got an e-card. It looks just like it came from a legitimate e-card company, and it's got a button or link to click to open the card. But what it really opens is a can of worms, that is, viruses. If you get an e-card from someone, contact them directly before you look at it. And if you're sending them, call people on the phone and tell them they're coming. Number 7 on the list you'd better check twice is phony holiday grants from the federal government or maybe your state government. This one is all too popular on Facebook, but there just ain't no such thing. If you get a message from a friend saying they got a grant and maybe you can too, you can be sure your friend's Facebook page has been hacked. Number 6 is the ever-popular mystery shopper scam. That's where somebody wants to hire you to test the system at some store or other, like the MoneyGram counter at Walmart. If you fall for this one, the scammer sends you a check for a lot of money and asks you to deposit the check and send some of it to a certain address. Of course, the check is a fake, but it takes a while to bounce, and all that money now comes out of your account. Number 5 is the so-called secret sister gift exchange, often found on Facebook and other social media. You send a gift or money to one person, and 8 people will send you something. But don't do it. Your money goes somewhere, and you get nothing. The secret sister is just Lucy in disguise, and there ain't no diamonds. The rest of the list is coming up next week, just in time for Black Friday and Cyber Monday. I'm Richard Fish for WFHB News and Public Affairs.
Better Beware comes to you from WFHB Bloomington, Indiana. Find all our episodes at wfhb.org. If you can help put the kibosh on a con, email beware@wfhb.org. Remember, swindlers never give a sucker an even break. You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Alex Davis and Wes Martin, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, in partnership with Community Access Television Services. Better Beware was produced by Richard Fish. Our feature was produced by Wes Martin.
Our engineer today is Dan Withard. Our theme music provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, this is Scott Weddle.
And I'm Barbara Fuqua. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported independent daily news program, recognized among the best newscasts in 2016 by the Indiana chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. Send inquiries to news@wfhb.org. And stay tuned for Standing Room Only, our award-winning weekly lecture series, coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.